Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also the editor of the Mark to Market blog, which we will link to below. And Mark, I've realized on your Mark to Market website here, you've been writing a lot about currencies and large focus on the euro and what's going on in Europe. We've read articles that, look, COVID is spiking in a few different areas in Europe. We've even seen some lockdowns being implemented starting next week in Austria. This is all causing the euro to continue to fade, which directly impacts the US dollar moving higher. I do want just your comments on the euro then. What's possible in your eyes, judging by the charts of how low the euro could go, and summarize just how weak the euro has been so far this year, please.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, that's really been a big story this week, I think, is just the persistence of the euro's decline, not just against the dollar, but it hasn't held up very well against the British pound, Japanese yen, but even the Swiss franc was trading at, I believe, its new six-year lows today, that is below 105. So what's driving this? I'd say two big forces. One is a broad U.S. dollar strength. And this is because of, I'd say that the key factor here would be policy divergence. The U.S., as you know, has already begun, the Federal Reserve begun tapering. The market's pricing in a chance of a hike in Q2 next year. The ECB is still playing the transitory inflation card, and the market has really listened to it. In the past 2 weeks, the market has unwound 20 basis points of tightening that it had priced into the swaps market for next year. So how to capture this? If you try to play this game from home, I would look at the two-year interest rate differential between the U.S. and Germany. I think that really encapsulates a lot of these forces. The U.S. now is offering about 128 basis points more than Germany to borrow two-year money. That is the highest level since the pandemic struck. It bottomed last summer at about right below 80 basis points. So we're talking about 50% increase. The spread is widened. And that just makes it so that one is paid to be long the U.S. dollar against the euro. So the euro is falling. And, when we talked last time, I was suggesting a target of about 112.90 in the euro, which is the key retracement of the euro's big rally from last March through early January when it peaked. So that was at the 112.90 level. We overshot that. And in fact, today, made new lows at 112.50. And what's giving it the extra boost today is this COVID, as you mentioned. You've got Austria having new lockdowns. Germany is suggesting that they could have new lockdowns as well. The virus, people say, well, how can this be? Haven't like 60, 70%, 75% of the people been vaccinated? And while that's true, they're still talking about, in order to get to what they talk about as herd immunity, need to have much higher levels than that. And so what happened, of course, is that when the guard was relaxed and the virus, especially among the unvaccinated, has just surged, and this caused an impact in what people expect to be the strength, the weakness of the Eurozone economy. The other fact that's happening is the U.S. inflation is running so much higher than the Eurozone. And partly, of course, it's because we've juiced up our economy. But here's what the Bank for International Settlement says. They say that the supply chain disruptions, if we could exclude them, U.S. inflation is around 2.5%, and Eurozone inflation is about 1.5%. And this is really the problem on this side of, as we work our way through COVID still, Japan reported their inflation numbers earlier today. And when you exclude fresh food and energy, they still have deflation. Europe doesn't look like they've really beaten back deflation, even though the CPI numbers are printing high right now. This is, in Europe's case, a case where it seems like it's a bunch of one-off factors and these supply shocks that are really the driver there, more than excessive fiscal spending, perhaps like some people say has happened in the United States. So these are the factors weighing on the euro. How far can we go? But last March, we were down to almost 106. I suspect that the next target is closer to 110 before we make it down there. But we go through 110 and at 106 and even parity will begin being talked about again.
Well, Mark, that's a dire outlook for the European situation and the euro. But when you look at the euro dollar chart, it does look like there's more downside weakness in store. And that is buoying the dollar. So let's shift it from the euro and to the effect of the U.S. dollar basket, because the other big story this week is the dollar breaking out. It was up at above 96 just overnight trading, and that's the highest level it's been all year. Most of that is predicated on the move into the dollar, like you said, because there's better rates of return here on bonds and on the short end of the curve. It encourages people to hold U.S. dollars because they're getting paid better than they are in other currencies. But what could that strong dollar mean for the other markets here in the U.S.? How could it affect commodities? How could it affect other markets as we see continued weakness in the euro bolstering the dollar?
Yeah, it's amazing, huh? Because we still have strong commodities, broadly speaking, and strong dollar. And actually, I think one of the puzzling things that happened this week is that gold remained pretty firm, say above 1850, even though the dollar was strong as well. So typically, right, the strong dollar, it takes a while. It's not like overnight, but the dollar strength over time tends to be trouble for emerging market countries, especially those who have borrowed dollars, those whose corporates have borrowed dollars. So dollar-denominated foreign exposure becomes more vulnerable in a strong dollar environment. And typically, the argument goes that weaker commodity prices also follow a strong dollar. But that relationship seems more tenuous, especially now that the key marginal buyer of commodities is China. And China's economy is sort of marching to a different drummer right now. You know, we saw that big collapse in ore prices earlier this week, and we've seen some weakness in some of the other metals. And this week, we also saw this like a crack in oil. So it's the fourth week down in a row. The breakdown is coming after more talk of coordinating the release of strategic reserves in the U.S., China, possibly Japan.
So, Mark, how do you see is this playing out then? Is the strong dollar going to become a problem for some of these other asset classes? Or is this dollar, even with the euro weakness, going to run its course sometime soon?
Yeah, so I'm kind of thinking that there's going to be some more upside here, just the key drivers. But it looks to me like some of the supply chain disruptions are easing. And what concerns me is that everybody's talking about and the debate about whether inflation is transitory. But what concerns me is that growth might be transitory. That is to say, we've already seen monetary policy move away from its peak easing. We have seen fiscal policy in most countries, leaving aside perhaps Canada and Japan among the major countries, fiscal policy past its peak. It's amazing. I think people just, I don't think, realize how much, because we're caught up with sort of the Biden's fiscal program, and I think people are missing what's really happening to the U.S. budget deficit. Give you a sense, last year it was about 15.5% of GDP. This year it's about 12.5% of GDP. Next year, closer to 6.5% of GDP. So we've got monetary past its peak, fiscal policy less supportive. I think the past rise in oil prices and gasoline prices still working its way through the system. A lot of pent-up demand is going to be exhausted. So I'm worried that the key to commodities might not be the dollar per se, but weakening of demand, not only in the U.S., but I think we're looking at most of the industrialized countries will be posting weaker growth next year than this year.
Well, Mark, when we look at this inflation picture, not everything is transitory. There's a lot of things like rents are up 16%. That's not transitory. Some of the food costs, while you can exclude those, the average consumer can't. So with retail consumption, and we're getting close to the holiday season, we're getting close for that big buying surge that retail depends on to buoy itself the rest of the year. Do you think this stronger dollar is maybe a mirage when the reality is most people are seeing costs go up? Their dollar's not buying as much. The dollars they have are eroding with inflation. So do you think that could impact retail consumption during the holiday season?
It could. I mean, I think to your point, it's true that consumers are facing higher prices than, say, the CPI, which, of course, is just a weighted basket. But here's what I think the news this week really was that the U.S. and the U.K., both reported stronger gains in October retail sales than the market was expecting. And Canada, today, Friday, ahead of the weekend, Canada reported a small decline in September retail sales, smaller than expected. And so generally, I think that's really been a bright spot is that, and I fully agree that the U.S. economy looks like it's accelerating here in Q4. If the economy to accelerate, we need stronger consumption, stronger output. And that's the news this week. Retail sales better than expected, so is industrial output. So I think that in the near term, Q4, Q1, growth should still be fairly robust in the most of the major countries. But as we go into second quarter, second half of next year, that's when I really think that the slowdown really begins biting. And that's when I think commodity prices begin weakening on demand, on demand side issues. And we'll see the is coming as Federal Reserve and other central banks begin tightening policy.
Yeah, this is one of the nuances of the inflation narrative that we've been hearing, is that we hear so much about supply side, but it's still demand. The consumer still seems to be very strong, or at least liquid, because of just how much consumer spending we have seen, and also businesses reinvesting back into their business, whether through higher wages or also capital expenditures. That's also been another growth avenue. Sounds like you are seeing or predicting that the consumer maybe starts to hold back some of their purchases by Q2, more broadly second half of next year. What about businesses? How are the businesses going to play into this? Are they still liquid enough to keep that inflation ball rolling?
Well, it does seem that, you know, so far we've seen the relatively strong corporate earnings, as many who are facing higher input costs have been able to pass those on. I think that we've got more headwinds coming. I think that the risk is, right, that the consumer, helped by deferring consumption last year when the economy was shut down, the help of transfer payments, and I've seen some studies that suggest that a lot of these excess savings that's helping the fuel consumption will also be running out towards the end of this year, early next year. That might also have impact on the labor market, maybe boosted participation rate. In the big picture, though, I think that the concern really is that policy becomes pro-cyclical, that as the economy slows down, policy begins tightening. And typically what you want is policy to be moving in the opposite direction. Take away the punch bowl when everybody's partying, not adding to the weakness of the economy by removing aggregate demand.
So, Mark, your takeaway then from, I guess, just the broad markets and how markets, even with this whole lack of breadth component, because really these averages are just being led by a handful of stocks again, how worrisome are you for these markets still with, it seems like, a pretty optimistic outlook into the first at least quarter to quarter and a half of next year?
Yeah, you know, you made a good point. You know, back the last serious dip, perhaps was back in late September when people were talking about the Evergrande in China being the next Lehman event. I bought on that dip, but maybe it's like a lot of scar tissue. But I think that buying on dip strategy is occurring to me, perhaps later than it should. But buying dip strategies only work if you can sell into the rally, so you can have the wherewithal to buy again on the next dip. So that's basically what I did, is I bought on a dip in the middle of September, and I sold it earlier this week. I bought the Qs, the NASDAQ 100, and I sold it, gained about 9%, and now waiting for a pullback to try to do it again.
Well, Mark, we're going to wrap it up here. I always enjoy hearing what you have to say. And quite frankly, no one knows how inflation is going to move, whether higher or lower, into next year. But it is going to be a key data point to watch, because we've seen inflation cause some market moves and initiate some trends in some of the sectors that, if inflation stays high, those sectors have plenty of room to run to the upside. But if inflation does drop, then we do need to assess what that means for markets and these other sectors. I know we're going to be talking about it a lot as we move into next year, but hey, Mark, always enjoy chatting with you. Thank you for your time. Hope you have a great weekend and a very happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, and you too, and good luck, everybody.